Are on KFCF 88.1 FM, independently owned and locally operated since 1975 in Fresno. My name is Dan Yassine, and I'm an anti-war and anti-empire activist. Jerry Bill is at the controls. Today is June 20th, 2018, third Wednesday of the month. Every third Wednesday from 3 to 3:30 p.m., I interview authors, scholars, bloggers, columnists, and activists who help us look at our world through the prism of American imperialism. On the show, we talk about U.S. foreign and domestic policies and the actions of the military-industrial congressional surveillance complex. These actions have severe consequences, not only for the American people, but also for the people in the other countries. To create a better, humane, and a compassionate world, we must first understand what is being done in our name, and we must always be willing to stand up, speak out, and speak truth to empire. Today, we have Ray McGovern on telephone with us. Hello, Ray.
Hello, Dan. How are you?
I'm very well, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Ray McGovern grew up in Bronx in the early 60s. He served as an Army Infantry Intelligence Officer, and then he was a CIA analyst for 27 years, from the administration of John F. Kennedy to that of George H.W. Bush. His duties included chairing national intelligence estimates and preparing the President's daily brief, which he briefed one-on-one to President Ronald Reagan's five most senior national security advisor from 1981 to 85. McGovern's post-retirement work includes commentating on intelligence issues and in 2003 co-founding Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. His commentaries appear on his website www.raymcgovern.com and on www.consortiumnews.com. Ray has appeared on many TV and radio programs and documentaries. Ray is fluent in Russian, German, and Spanish. Well, let's start talk about something that you and your group, Veteran Intelligence Professional for Sanity, VIPS, has thoroughly investigated, that is Russiagate. Why so little is heard these days that Russia hacked into the U.S. election in 2016?
Well, there's still some pieces heard here, but the evidence is pretty much crumbled. And in a word, Russiagate has evolved into FBI Gate, or Department of Justice Gate, or Deep State Gate. What has been uncovered, ironically, because of the Robert Mueller investigation and the Inspector General investigation of the Justice Department, and the IG of the Justice Department has purview over the FBI, is that quite aside from any evidence, which is negligible if there's any at all, that Russia hacked into our election process or interfered in an unseemly way, in a way different from previous years. Contrary to that, it does look like there was interference in our election in November or early months of before November of 2016. Now, ironically, the actors here appear to be the Department of Justice and the FBI. Let me explain. There's a fellow who is the number two man in the FBI, responsible for counterintelligence. His name is Peter Strzok. And he had this romance going with Lisa Page, and an attorney who worked directly for the deputy director. Now, what happened was that he reassured her, and we have those texts in hand, when she said, "Are you sure we can communicate this way?" And didn't we include one of the presidential nominees? And they said, "Okay, no, nobody can hear us." And that's why I call Peter Strzok dumbstruck. He said, "No, no problem, no problem. We use our FBI cellular phones, and we're fine. Well, turns out they weren't fine. Now, we knew in mid-December last year of these text messages because the Inspector General of the Department of Justice gave them to Congress. So now here we are 7 months later, finally dealing with them. What's one that just came out? Well, the Department of Justice and the FBI were not completely honest in giving what the House committees asked for. But what they did give is, for example, a Peterstruck text to Lisa Page saying, "Don't worry about it. He can't win. I will stop him." Whoa! Him being Trump, of course. Now, the Inspector General report talks about bias. It says, now, there was a lot of bias there. But we can't prove that it affected the actual decisions of the Justice Department in proceeding. Now that's really kind of strange, because all it means is that, well, let me just read the words here. Here's the Inspector General, a lawyerly sentence. "We did not find documentary or testimonial evidence that improper considerations, including political bias, directly affected the specific investigative decisions." Well, hello. So they didn't find documentary or testimonial evidence. What does that mean? Well, I have a good friend who was a FBI lawyer, and he says that just means that nobody admitted it, and they could find no documents where Peter Strzok, for example, says, "I'm going to do A, B, and C specifically to make sure that Hillary is exonerated and that Trump is blackened." Now, the operative thing here, Dan, is really strange. Here is Peter Strzok, well known to be heavily biased for Hillary Clinton and against Trump. And he's instrumental in making sure that Hillary Clinton is exonerated even before she's interviewed. I mean, that's quite a feat, isn't it? And immediately, as soon as that happens, he's put on the Trump brigade to make sure that they find out some evidence that Trump was in the pocket of Putin, of the Russian President Putin. That's really, really strange. And that gets to the whole question of Robert Mueller. He hired Strzok, and Strzok led the investigation on Russia for 9 months. Now, Robert Mueller is supposed to be a smart guy. Did he not interview Strzok before putting him in charge of this investigation? Did he not look into his background and see what his biases were? Well, either he didn't or he did. In either case, Mueller comes off as, I'll use the word because it's the way we used to use up in the Bronx, he's an out-and-out crook. And he's ill-deserving of this sainted reputation that the Washington Post and the New York Times gave him as universally respected. We have people who worked for Mueller and for Comey. Colleen Rowley, for example, one of the counsels in the FBI, and she's written chapter and verse about them both. I'm happy to share those details with you as well, but let me end it here and let you ask your questions.
Ray, you co-founded the group VIPS, Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Salary. Tell us about its history and why did you feel it was necessary to start such a group?
Sure. Well, Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, and we established it at a time, namely late January 2003, when there wasn't much sanity observable here in this town in Washington, and where we thought we had to hold our colleagues, our former colleagues, responsible. We knew they were falsifying intelligence to justify, in quotes, a war against Iraq. That's as bad as you can get. And so we established ourselves. There were only five of us at the beginning. Now there are about 50. And we wrote three memos to President Bush saying, look, we've been being led by down the garden path here. There is no evidence of weapons of mass destruction. and your vice president, Dick Cheney, is leaning all over our former colleagues to get them to lie, to make sure that a war will start, which we feel will have catastrophic consequences. Now, we feel no delight in having been right. There are catastrophic consequences now. Just look at the Middle East. But we established ourselves then. That was our first memorandum. That was on 5 February when Colin Powell told those lies before the UN. We got out a same-day appreciation of that in the early evening, actually 5:30 in the afternoon, and put it on the AFP wire so the world could see that at least these professional intelligence analysts could see all the holes in Powell's argument. Now, it got around, and we got all kinds of requests for interviews from all over the world except one country, the United States of America. Nobody was interested in what we, with hundreds of years of experience, thought about what Powell said. So, fast forward up to these days here, we're really interested in making sure that our profession is gotten back on the right path. And we see what's been happening here with respect to all this furious argumentation with respect to Russiagate and so forth. Now we have documentary evidence. We have documentary evidence that the FBI lead investigator who absolved Hillary Clinton and who pursued with a vengeance Donald Trump and admitted it in the texts of which we have, now we have that evidence. And the question is, will our congressional overseers step up to the plate, as we say in America, and deal with this? Now, there's a long story here, but I'll be short. After all the abuses of the CIA, FBI, NSA, and others were unraveled and revealed in the mid-70s, and the Church Commission made some adjustments and set up two oversight committees, one in the House, one in the Senate, things purred along pretty well for the first decade or so. And then gradually, intelligence officers being as good as they are at cajoling and subverting and getting people to cooperate. Long story short, on the Senate side, the Senate Intelligence Committee is joined at the hip with the CIA. It has blessed things like torture, blessed things like illegal eavesdropping, and so there is no prospect that one can expect any solace or any good reconstruction of the intelligence community as long as Richard Burr from North Carolina is in charge of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Now, on the House side, it's quite different, and actually it's really worth pointing out that the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, a congressman actually from out your way, I think, Devin Nunes from the Central Valley, he seems to think that the intelligence that we all swear an oath to support and defend against all enemies, foreign and domestic, he thinks that this is important, and he's following his oath, and he's going after what's happened here. Now, is he up against it? Well, you know the old story about David and Goliath. Yeah, he's really up against it. Has he shown that he's a weeping or a weeping violet, or is he too tame for them? Well, all I know is that he has said in an interview that if he finds wrongdoing that needs to be prosecuted, very, very senior people will be put on trial. Why do I mention that? I mention that because that's throwing down the gauntlet, so to speak. That's challenging the most powerful people in Washington, bar none. I'm talking about the head of the FBI, the head of the CIA, the head of the NSA, and until recently, the leading lights of the Department of Justice. So what do I see happening here? Well, Congressman Devin Nunes has asked for documents from the FBI and from the Department of Justice. Did they give him the documents? No. Did they give him the text of this most recent email that's just been revealed? Namely, Lisa Page saying to Peter Strzok, "Oh, no, no, Trump will never be our president, right?" Strzok, "No, he will never be. I will prevent it." End quote. Whoa! Now, they held that from the head of the Intelligence Committee, and he's fit to be tied. So the question is, do we have a constitutional crisis arising here? If the House Committee Chairman is unable to discharge his constitutional responsibilities to oversee the House, to oversee the Intelligence Committee, in this case, the FBI, Department of Justice, and the CIA, well, then we have the kind of crisis where the deep state usually wins. And that means that Devin Nunes would lose. The jury is out. I'm not a betting man, but it would be really hard to bet on Nunes, despite his courage and despite his determination to exercise and fulfill his constitutional responsibilities. So we have to tune in these days, because Nunes has come out, his committee has come out with an honest appreciation of what happened with respect to Russiagate. And let me just be very brief here. The whole premise of Russiagate, of course, where Russia is accused of interfering in our election, the whole premise rests on the assumption, and it is an assumption, that President Putin preferred to have Trump as president. That is ridiculous. I have studied Soviet and Russian leaders for 55 years now, academically and in the government, and I can tell you, let me put it this way, here they are sitting around a table during the campaign in 2016, and Putin's watching Trump, and he's saying to his colleagues, "My God, look at this guy, he's unpredictable." And he brags about it, and look how he lashes out at every imagined or real slight. "Oh, this is just a guy. This is just a guy. I want to be president of the United States with his fingers on the nuclear buttons. This is going to be really fun. Do everything you can to help him." Give me a break. If that sounds crazy, it is crazy. I can't see that Putin would have any preference for either of those people who are running for president. The other thing, of course, is that Hillary Clinton was a shoo-in. Everyone knew she was going to win, right?
Yep.
So here's Putin. He's thinking, well, Clinton's going to win. So, yeah, just for fun. Yeah, just for fun, I think I'll order my intelligence service just to break into the Democratic National Committee and see what we can find. They'll find out about it, and then she'll be really, really angry. But she's already angry at me. So, yeah, just for fun, why don't you break into the DNC? Well, give me a break. That didn't happen either. So the whole premise of this thing, which was contained in this joint effort by the FBI, NSA, and CIA, given to President-elect Trump on the 6th of January 2017, it was evidence-free and was based on this assumption, and it simply said, "Mr. President, we think they preferred you, and we think that Putin helped you win, and by the way, Mr. President, we have this really scurrilous information on you. You know, it says that you are consorting with prostitutes in Moscow. It's going to say, now, we don't know if it's true. Actually, it's unconfirmed, but just so you know, Mr. President, that we have it." Now, and what we have there is the classic FBI technique. When a new president-elect comes in, the FBI says, "Now, just so you know, Mr. President, we've got this dirt on you. It's about to hit the press. We can't confirm it, but we want you to know that we got this." Now, if I were Trump during that briefing, I would have said, "Mr. Comey, thank you very much. Please clear out your desk in the next few days, because as soon as I'm president, you're out of there." I would have fired him on the spot, okay? So later, when he tells a reporter, "Yeah, I fired him because of this Russia stuff," it wasn't evidence of trying to obstruct justice. It was a stupid way of saying, "Yeah, this Russia stuff that they were sticking on me from these unnamed sources, from these scurrilous stories and so forth, just to let me know that they had this stuff on me. So Trump, I think he's the worst president that we ever had, Dan. And look what he's been doing in separating families. But, you know, we should get rid of him on grounds that are well-established. We shouldn't get rid of him on made-up stories that the Democrats are promoting. I, being a lifelong Democrat, just I'm appalled at how low they've fallen promoting this phony Russiagate, which now most American citizens can see has turned into FBI gate.
You are listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on KFCF 88.1 FM, independently owned and locally operated since 1975 in Fresno. We are speaking with Ray McGovern, political activist and commentator on intelligence issue. Let's talk a little bit more about something that you wrote in one of your recent articles, that on March 7, 2017, WikiLeaks started publishing Vault 7, a trove of original CIA documents which disclosed a vast array of cyber warfare tools developed by CIA's Engineering Development Group. The group was a part of Digital Innovation Directorate. What should we know about that group?
Well, this is a really essential story that has been kept out of the press, and it goes like this. In 2015, John Brennan established a completely new directorate in the CIA. Now, since CIA's inception, it's only had three directorates. Then they added science and technology, then there were four. Now there are five. And this new directorate is called Digital Innovation Directorate. Now, what happened was he got hundreds of people from NSA, which has this expertise, and put them to work on developing, let's say, cyber tools, offensive cyber tools. NSA does the defensive work. They just as soon have the CIA put his neck out and do the offensive work. Now, what was revealed, and one of the reasons that CIA and Pompeo hate Julian Assange so much, is that someone within the CIA gave a treasure trove of original documents called Vault 7. And in those documents, and again, these are authentic documents, they're not disavowed by anyone, in that treasure trove, which Julian Assange advertised as being more comprehensive and more damaging than all the material that it's noting put into Hong Kong, you can take over the driving of a car, and you can make it go 110 miles an hour. The brakes don't work, and you can really, really mess somebody up, and you really kill them that way. You can use a TV machine, a TV that you think is turned off, but monitors everything in your bedroom. The most important tool here, which was reported by WikiLeaks, but not by the New York Times, so most of your readers, most of your listeners will know nothing about this. It was called Vault 7 Marble Framework. Now, mark my words, this is really interesting. Marble Framework was a tool used in 2016, and what it allows the CIA to do is to hack into a computer system or server, disguise who hacked in, and leave telltale signs in five languages: Persian, Iranian, Korean, Chinese, and Russian. Okay? Now, great thing, because you can hack in and make believe it's somebody else by leaving these telltale signs. Now, most of your listeners will have heard about the telltale signs of Cyrillic, you know, Russian, left into some of these hacks, alleged hacks by Russia. Well, guess what, folks? We can prove by forensics, and that is, well, veteran intelligence professionals for sanity have two former technical directors of NSA that looked at this material, and they've said, look, this is bogus. This This material that they're blaming on the Russians could not have been a hack to begin with. It had to be a copy onto a thumb drive. And the Cyrillic in these things, and the Russian-made formats, like the Russian Microsoft Word format or something, that is all inserted in there. Now, we don't know who did that, but we suspect that it wasn't Russian hacking in the summer of 2016. Our bet, and Bill Binney, the technical director of NSA, who is most involved in this, he agrees with me that if you're looking for who hacked into the Democratic National Committee and blamed it on the Russians, I would say the fellow's initials are John Brennan, the head of the CIA, because he had that capability. We know it was used in 2016. We knew it could leave Cyrillic traces behind. And the established press here, the mainstream media, so to speak, have fallen for it, or maybe they're eagerly glommed onto it because of this pressure campaign against anyone who wants to deal with Russia. Maybe I would say just another word about that. You know, there are a lot of people that will lose big if there is less tension against Russia, and that is the military, industrial, congressional, intelligence, media complex. Mm-hmm. I just talked about military, industrial. Now it's the military, industrial, congressional, intelligence, media complex. They're all in it together. And you see it not only in the so-called Russiagate, but you also see it on Korea. What happened as soon as there was talk of real peace in Korea? I'll tell you what happened. Shares of Raytheon, makes the Patriot and Tomahawk missiles. Shares of Lockheed Martin plummeted the next day. So there's big money involved here, and that explains an awful lot of this Russiagate stuff, and also the opposition, the unseemly opposition toward peace with Korea.
Ray, you have covered quite a lot, everything. I was going to ask you for your comment in another minute or so we have left, and you did bring up the Trump Kim Jong-un summit in Singapore. The comment I would like to make is that we have had, 12 U.S. presidents since 1950, when Truman started the Korean War, until Obama, and none of them had the gumption to call for peace on the Korean Peninsula, and Trump has done that. Yes, we are a long way off from signing a peace treaty, but the process has begun, but the opposition that's coming from majority of the Democratic in the Democratic Party and some in Republican Party. So in 1 month, just in half a minute, basically, just tell us what can peace activists like us do to make sure that this peace process continues.
Well, I think the first thing is to be aware. I just read the New York Times. I don't buy it, but I read it in the drugstore, okay? I won't invest $3 in the New York Times anymore. The whole editorial page, that is two-thirds of it, is devoted to a very, very doctrinaire pedantic lecture on how you can't trust the North Koreans.
Ray, we are out of time, and okay. We need to... thank you so much for being my guest on the show.
You're most welcome.
You have been listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF FM, independently owned and locally operated since 1975 in Fresno. We were speaking with Ray McGovern, political activist and commentator on intelligence issues. My name is Dan Yassin, host of the show. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back 3rd Wednesday of next month.